This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
This is Bill Arnett, an improv chief of surgery, yet merely a philosophy orderly.
This is Mark Linsenmeyer, a philosophy ER floating head. Gosh, I haven't watched enough medical dramas recently to have the terminology top of mind, but definitely a first-year resident as far as improv goes.
Yeah, okay, but a resident, not a medical student, not an undergrad.
No, they don't let undergrads in the hospital. There's a rope.
Well, I mean, they can be patients.
Our special guest, please introduce yourself.
Mike Gorgone. I would guess I'm going to classify myself as a hospital maintenance worker, as far as my philosophy level goes. So,
okay.
Cleaning up messes, probably. Mm.
So you're not the case of the week. You're not the patient of the week. That's the audience.
I could be.
I mean, I know usually you would think the audience of the podcast would correspond with the audience of the medical drama, but we're just assuming that nobody ever listens to our show more than once. So
they're cured. They don't need to come back.
Yes. It's like we're aiming our content directly at the, let's say, three for a good medical drama. You want three cases going at the same time, I would say.
Yeah. Well, misdiagnose one is MS. Well, misdiagnose one other is some mental disorder. And then the other one is just an affair of the heart or something. I think that pretty well sums it up, yeah.
Usually, like, one of the doctors ends up coming into the ER or something. Eventually, this happens. Yes. Perhaps not in the premiere.
Yeah.
Or it's someone they knew came into the ER, and yes, it's their best friend, and now they're conflicted as to what they got to do.
Yes, of course, they can't tell anybody who's their best friend.
No.
You know, yeah, because of some financial dealing or something, you know.
My best friend told me that he wished he was aborted at birth, and now that he's come in at age 35, I don't know whether I should abort him or not.
Yeah. It's probably MS. Let's just get him out of here. Get him out of here!
It was always his wish.
Do you want to fill us in on what you do in terms of improv? I know we've had another member of your show. Perhaps you could remind folks. Actually, nobody saw that last one that's watching this. Oh. So, okay.
That's true. So I should improv-wise, I am half of the hosting duo of the improvised podcast Hitchhikers and Appetizers, set in the glorious universe of Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, specifically in Milliways, where I play Trellis Gardeen, the face of Glandar, the universe's home to plastic surgery, the floor model at many of a plastic surgeon's waiting room. And then Bram plays Horatio Zinn, his counterpart, to guide contributors who are too lazy to actually hitchhike around the universe and have decided to let the universe come to them at Milliways. And they sit in booth 42, interviewing the universe's most fascinating and interesting beings.
A fantastic podcast that I have guested on and can't say enough wonderful things about.
Well, I've guessed it on it, but I'm not sure if it is a scam because my episode still has not come out after 5 months or whatever. So
this season has been the sloggiest of slogs. I don't understand why we can't seem to nail people down to get to the 24 episodes we are trying to get to for this.
So you want to have them all recorded, all 24, before you release any of them?
Yes.
That is crazy. That is a strange amount of planning.
Yeah. Perhaps over planning. I don't know. But
is this a network podcast? Is that what this is?
We wanted to get them so we could release them in batches of three. And so I don't want to like just kind of leave it. And then they're just sitting there with nothing for a while. But I don't know why we've had such a hard time. People's schedules are just a lot busier. And they're like, yeah, I can do it. And then something comes up and they can't do it. Because obviously, as you well know, we're not paying people. We fall down the priority ladder when our fellow improvisers who are also working actors get gigs, which I totally understand.
Well, you know, in some ways, it actually might be a more natural way that people listen to podcasts, in that maybe I'm speaking for myself here, but I will listen to a podcast pretty religiously for several months. And then, you know, I think when I move on to something else, and then I'll come back to it and pick up the past episodes. And that might actually be more, if other people listen like that, than this production model, and it may actually meet people's listening model.
They can binge the whole season.
Yes.
And if you're going to take a break, this might be the time to do it. Election season, where I am now at least listening to several election-related, political-related podcasts that I never listened to before, and I probably will never listen to again when I'm done with the stressing on a daily basis about.
Now, Mark, you are in a swing state, are you not?
The swingiest of swing states.
Okay. All right. Up in Wisco.
As am I.
Okay. All right.
We're down here in Georgia, and obviously, There's always apparently 11,780 votes that need to be found.
Dang it, we'll find them. Under the couch, under the rug.
Speaking of that, his orangeness is going to be making an appearance where I live here in the next week or so, apparently. And I was a shudder at the thought of him rolling his cholesterol-filled arteries through here.
This is not going to come out until after the election. And who knows how many assassination attempts or what, you know, I guess we could edit this out if it becomes too sensitive to younger viewers.
Can it be considered an assassination? Can cholesterol actually try to assassinate somebody?
Well, I know it's illegal to threaten to kill the president. Is it illegal to threaten to kill a past president or a candidate? Or is it all, everything's good?
Probably. No, I think any threat is probably bad.
Sure.
I just don't know if cholesterol can have the intent to assassinate someone. I mean, clearly, that would be a lot of people.
I'm threatening right here now. If I get a time machine, Warren G. Harding is going down. Nothing can stop me. The laws of physics, perhaps. But
he had so many chances to prevent the Great Depression. Really?
Have you checked 23andMe, though? Because should you happen to be possibly related to him, we have a paradox.
I mean, I guess I'll take that chance. Somebody that I like was descended from him. It's very possible.
It could be some girl who you hooked up with, and then right in the middle of that amorous encounter, poof, she just vanishes.
I think maybe the way it works is that they regress through all their ancestors until the one that you killed. So, like, you're doing the love, and then she becomes her mother, becomes her father, becomes, and then becomes Warren G. Harding.
Warren G. Harding. Yeah. Wow, that would be awesome.
You're getting freaky with a friend.
You go in one end of the tunnel and come out the other.
I can't think of a fake physics reason why that would happen in a time travel scenario, but I think it's cool. So, I think it should be used in a time travel movie.
That's far cooler than them just vanishing like a Back to the Future photo.
Yeah. It kind of ruins the mood, but it would be fascinating.
Oh, yeah. However, you know, post, if you caught something, though, you know, STD-wise, you'd be in the clear.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
This is making me think of Sparta Spooky Season, which will have long passed by the time people hear this. I have been checking out horror properties, including Junji Ito, and one of his Netflix cartoons has to do with people that are built like trees where they just have rings. So like if you claw out their outer skin, then you find them they're there from last year, and you claw another one and then they're there. And I think that if you claw enough, you get to Warren G. Harding. I think that's
like the thinnest level of Russian doll ever. Like, the thickness between Russian doll is just minute. But Warren G. Harding was pretty big, wasn't he?
As a big man or a big presence?
Big guy.
Not familiar.
Maybe, you know what? I'm thinking of Taft.
Taft was a very big guy. And again, a big guy in the 19th century is an absolute regular Joe today, I feel like. I probably outweigh the first 25 presidents.
He's probably got his own exercise channel on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
You know, though significantly overweight with a high stomach that seemed to pressure his breastbone, Harding was still an impressive man, olive-skinned and with wiry gray hair, caterpillar eyebrows, and the sculpted nose of a Roman senator.
Okay. Written by Mrs. Harding? I don't know.
We've never done improv via Google.
Oh, I was going to say, was that the ChatGPT answer?
That was not the overview. That was from something called closingbooks.blogspot.com.
Fair enough.
I'm not going to pursue that any further. But
describe Warren G. Harding in flowery prose.
Every man wanted to be him. Every woman wanted to love him.
And every man wanted to elect him.
It's the hard Harding. I think that said that right on his.
It's right in the name.
Campaign posters. Yep.
Yeah. Get hard.
Yeah, things have gotten so tame in elections now. Like, I hear that long ago, they were much more blatant. I mean, maybe they didn't swear as much as we do.
I think for their context in history, they were supposed to be like very vicious. You know, I mean, when Hamilton came out, like you look at the things he wrote, I mean, they sound kind of humorous to us, but apparently those were like some really wicked sick burns when he was writing out his letters to the editor and whatever. Wherever else he would send them.
Always heard that when they originally did the Deadwood TV series about turn of the prior century, Deadwood, Old West, Wild West, that they had used period swear words, but everybody sounded like Yosemite Sam.
To- tarnation.
Yeah, it just didn't work. Like, this is ridiculous. So they had to make it modern swear words to make people think. Like,
varmint doesn't carry the weight it used to.
Yes, yes, yes. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Who's yellow-bellied? Excuse me?
Notice I didn't say Richard?
Yes.
Well, I recall when Grover Cleveland defeated James G. Blaine in 1884, the main campaign ad was just James G. Blaine, rapscallion. And that was it. It just, everybody was like, oh, there's that rapscallion.
Done.
Yeah.
Once that brand is there, the Scarlet R never leaves.
I feel like we've gotten enough material out that we could found a scene based on this. Now, there's often a philosophical lesson and an improv lesson that each of us brought in. We're not throwing out either of them right up front these days, that we try to have them emerge naturally. Maybe my lesson has come up so far. Maybe not. Maybe we've just been screwing around. There's been so many vital things to talk about that we haven't quite gotten to it. But our first scene is a good place where these things might become explicit.
Okay. I, too, have a proto-lesson that may emerge or not emerge. We shall see.
About protoplasm?
Gross. Gross.
All right. Let's get this to a full plasm.
Hey, fellas, I wanted to talk to you real fast here. I was doing some experiments, my protoplasm experiments, and they're missing. The petri dishes are empty, and I don't know if that protoplasm walked away.
No, I drank them. I drank them, Bill.
Whoa, I drank them.
I was thirsty.
These petri dishes sitting out on the counter in the incubator? Yes.
They look like very shallow cups.
It is a colorless material. One might think that it is water for drinking.
Why would I put water for drinking in a petri dish, put it in the incubator, and write all kinds of data on top with grease pencil?
I thought that was the amount of electrolytes in them. I had a very difficult workout earlier.
Well, great. Thank you for drinking my experiment. I don't know what's going to happen to you. I really don't. You could...
I'm an experiment within an experiment now. You should write something about me.
Well, if you grow hair or get smarter or dumber or an erection, let me know. Just let me know.
What if it's all of them?
Hey,
so if it's a hairy erection, I'm going to be really happy.
Wow. Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, I guess. We'll see what the FDA has to say about it, but...
I know usually we have a research program and we try to do things in an organized way, but I hear some of the most important discoveries are entirely accidental. Often with people accidentally using the formula or whatever on themselves, maybe getting caught in some radiation. We've just been around here. Our safety practices make this more likely. Let's say that.
Look, I'm a maverick. I know I'm just the maintenance guy around here, and you know I just clean up things.
You're
from
the
time
maintenance
to time,
guy,
but that takes a yes
in a lab coat.
That's why. Yes,
we let him. He likes to feel included, so we.
Are
just
you
let
a maintenance
him.
Guy as well, Mark? Is this?
No, you hired me.
Well, yeah, but it just,
you know, we have the program.
Okay.
But we play a little loose down here. We like to have a guest of the week come in. Sometimes it's the maintenance guy and he gets to do part of the experiment. Sometimes it is my best friend. And then I'm really torn about what I should do, like whether I should give them radiation or not.
Okay, don't give people radiation. Let's just start there. Have you all been irradiating yourselves?
I mean,
that depends.
Oh, fellas, don't do that. Don't irradiate yourselves.
I try to blast my core at the gym, and I'd like to blast it with some radiation on the side.
But not your core of all places to irradiate yourself.
I was hoping I'd double my six pack. Things mutate.
I try to just irradiate the guest. So that then maybe if they turn into something, then I will try it on myself so I can become their nemesis. Does that make sense?
Oh. Yeah, it makes sense. It's just highly unethical.
How are you feeling with the Petri results there, Michael?
What do you think the time is going to take for me to really see some good results? Because like if you're using Rogaine, it could take 4 to 5 months for you to see any hair. Am I going to have to wait 4 or 5 months before my hairy penis shows up?
These were just some extracts and some concentrates from some biological samples that we were just trying to isolate in the lab and make more of it. We have no idea what this is going to do.
They're isolated in my stomach now.
But yeah. And then irradiated, bombarded with.
And then irradiated.
With radiation.
Yeah.
Some of them were from lizards. So maybe you'll grow an extra something. But I mean, we could try just chopping off one of your fingers and see if it grows back.
I was just going to say, I hope something grows back if I lose it.
Or a lizard grows in your stomach and bursts out of your chest like Alien.
That's ridiculous.
That would be a great Halloween costume. I just got to time it up right. Because if it comes out too soon, clearly the surprise is spoiled. And if it comes out too late, everyone's just going to say, I lied about my costume and you're really just too lazy to do something.
I think they're going to say, we miss Mike. What a fool to have drank in random Petri dish juice in a lab.
But it wasn't random. It was labeled.
Was it labeled water? Was it labeled Coca-Cola? How was it labeled?
I treat all clear liquids like water.
I mean, it is the primary characteristic of water. It only makes sense.
And it was odorless and tasteless. So that's 3 out of 3.
Right.
Let's presume that nothing happens. This still means I have to rerun all my tests to re-isolate the chemicals and the protein to grow more. That was the initial concern of mine. It was not that anybody may have drank it.
That's what the grant funds. So it's okay if we have to do that some extra times. It's just, I don't like the idea that we might waste a big discovery, a big fluke on something jumping out of somebody's chest. Like if you don't actually transform into the thing, then I don't really have a lot of use for that.
If it jumps out of my chest, this could be a great bioweapon. Think of the millions, untold millions, the governments would want to get their hands on this, slipping into people's drinks. Who knows, you know, 1 day, 2 weeks, 4 months later, creature bursts out of their chests. The more the distance in time, the less they're going to be able to trace it back to the government that gave it to them.
Okay, so we're thinking we'll just give Osama bin Laden some Petri dish water and
sure
let nature take its course. Okay, that's what I'm sure.
I mean, we did that, and then it finally burst out of his chest 4 years after he was killed by other means. But I'd like to think that it would have taken him down.
Well, how do we know that was a bullet that burst through his head? It could have been a lizard.
That burst out of his head.
Yes, at the exact same time he got shot.
Right, because the gunshots scare lizards, I understand.
Yeah, the bang caused it to just, it was probably sleeping and then just
right.
Startled it awake.
Most people killed by guns are not, they say guns don't kill people. Lizards reacting to guns kill people.
Yes, exactly.
Not aware. I was not aware. It's the first time I'm hearing it. All right, well, fellas, I've got work to do, apparently, to re-isolate materials.
Next time, just label do not drink. Add that to the label and you'll be okay.
How about let's just do a global do not drink in the lab. Let's just anything you see rather than making labels on everything.
Nothing?
Let's just say don't drink anything in the lab.
All right. Well, if you're going to re-isolate this, I want to work with Michael's innards and establish a relationship with anything that might be lurking inside, because that's really my main problem. If Michael turns into something, we've got an understanding. If something bursts out of him, there's not NDAs. It seems like we need to go through some preliminaries to get some productive relationships going.
Well, do you guys have a comfy place I could hang out in? Because like I got kicked out of my apartment last week. So,
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, there's a trunk under the stairs.
Maybe go live with Mark. Maybe hang out at Mark's place, huh? You got a spare bedroom, Mark? You can crash.
I have a trunk under the stairs, yes.
A cupboard like Harry Potter living under the stairs?
I mean, if you're really just opening it to say hello to the potential being lurking inside, I think a trunk is right on target. You don't want to overstimulate.
Yeah, exactly. It's in the dark, soundproof. It'll probably just fall asleep.
Yeah, we just want to make Michael into a pure incubator.
Don't shoot a gun near it because I don't want it startling awake.
Right. Oh, no. I live in a very good neighborhood.
Okay.
No guns under the stairs for sure.
Well, I'll leave you to it. Let me know the results. I imagine it's just going to end up being the two of y'all hanging out for the weekend.
Are you going to want that in a PowerPoint? And how many slides are you thinking?
Hey, if something bursts out of your chest, 20. How about that?
That sounds reasonable.
I am imagining the most likely scenario is after drinking Petri dish water and getting hit by gamma rays in the stomach, abdomen, my guess is a weekend of diarrhea. I'm just going to save that right now.
That's happened without Petri dishes to me, so.
The trunk is lined. It's okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a preview to the 1981 film Basket Case, where a guy carries around his brother who's a monster in a basket.
Okay. Yeah. I believe you.
Bow. Okay. Was that too deep a cut? That's probably too deep a cut.
Never.
I explained it. It's okay.
That was enjoyable.
Was that the actual plot of that movie, Mark?
Well, I mean, I think it was his Siamese brother who had been carved off him into put in a basket.
Congenital.
Yeah. Right. And he would jump out and eat people.
Yeah.
Of course, as one does. It seemed like we were learning a lot about discoveries there.
Mm.
The different ways in which people can make discoveries that they could learn something, as Mike was learning, deeply about himself.
Yes.
Indeed.
About his likes and dislikes.
A need for exploration. Trying new things. Leaping without looking at all.
Space, the final frontier.
Yes.
Yes, we're actually also recording this on Indigenous Peoples Day, aka Columbus Day. Mm-hmm. And as we know, Columbus just like was out partying. And then he was like, oh, what's that? Is that's a whole land that I've discovered. He wasn't looking for it. If anything, he was hoping to get to Asia. But there it was. Only 7 tequilas in, he and his crew beheld the new world and just proceeded to get out and shit all over it.
Yes.
I think it's interesting is that whole certain inventions, like if Columbus hadn't done it, somebody else would have. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, the Vikings made it to Newfoundland. That's now a proven fact. But like someone would have done it, but no one else would have painted the Mona Lisa. Is there something more impressive with somebody doing something that no one else? I mean, like, how much should we celebrate the first guy who slam dunk a basketball? It's like, it's going to happen. You know, it's like, it's not like, oh my gosh, I never thought to jump. You know, you know,
it might have been Mona Lisa's sister. Did she have a sister?
Who slam dunk a basketball?
Well, yes.
That would be fantastic. That would really be something.
Painted while dunking a basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, apparently Africans sailed to the Americas centuries before Columbus, and it's merely racist history that has said the Vikings maybe were first. No.
There are many. Thor Heyerdahl, his whole thing. What was that? Pyramids in South America. They must have learned them from the Egyptians. There's no way another ancient peoples would have thought to stack a bunch of blocks of stone on top of each other.
In a format that makes them very solid.
Yeah, no one would have thought of that. Children can't even think of that.
No.
So give a child a bunch of blocks and see what happens. See what they don't do. They stack him up. But apparently Thor Heyerdahl, was it the 70s when his thing, he rode a reed boat across the ocean to prove that Egyptians could have made it to South America? Nobody. No one knows this reference. Come on now. Mark, I thought you would have known about Thor Heyerdahl.
I do not.
Okay. No, I thought you were talking about the actual Thor. I thought you were talking about the gods. The gods. Chariots of the Gods.
Chariots of the Gods was his book. Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. So we don't know how one minute they were just have little huts. And then right after that, they have these giant architectural marvels. Must have been aliens. That's a proof, a discovery.
Clearly.
And if, you know, there's hieroglyphics that say, and then the aliens came.
Yeah. Apparently. So Thor Heyerdahl was trying to prove that Egyptians could have sailed to South America by actually sailing in a reed boat across the ocean. The first several boats he had were built by the reed boat builders on the Nile, and it sank because they're like, yeah, reed boats, you have to let them dry out every few days or they'll sink. And he had, get this, South American reed boat builders from the shores of Lake Titicaca come to Egypt to build a reed boat, and that one made it. But he never postulated that maybe the South Americans made it over to Egypt to show them how to make pyramids.
It was the great descendants of those people who went over to Egypt originally. Yeah, oh, yeah. You're building. You need to go from Egypt to here? Oh, yeah. My ancestors did that. We can show you.
Oh, yeah.
I've not actually heard the theory that it, in fact, was indigenous Americans that sailed across the Atlantic first and then were just like, no. And then they just... This is a bunch of bullshit.
It's way better back over at our place.
Yeah. Don't tell anyone what we found.
They don't have tortillas over here. This is horrible.
Where's the maze?
There's no maze. Yeah.
Look at these people. They haven't even developed maize.
And then they built the sharks to prevent the Europeans from going over there. Mm-hmm. You know, let's just line the ocean with sharks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's just science.
Yeah.
And they obfuscated their calendar to keep us from understanding.
Would that be considered the first iteration of Star Wars, the missile defense system, but as a shark defense system?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Strategic Defense Initiative.
The Shark Defense Initiative, SDI.
Yeah.
This is also hurricane season that we're recording this. Are we prepared to defend ourselves against Sharknadoes? Do we have the missile capabilities to shoot down the flying sharks before they land in our flooded streets?
That's a good question. I mean, they're going to just come out of that thing so randomly. You probably don't know where or when. I mean, the system's going to have to be responsive. It's going to be very, very responsive in terms of being able to acquire and track each shark as it becomes a projectile.
I'm liking my odds that the fight will happen most likely on land. And Bill versus Shark. Okay, question two, what's the venue?
Right.
And I'm very much liking Bill versus Shark terrestrial. I'm liking my odds.
You'll get in the octagon if it's not a pool, right?
Correct.
Again, we will really want to date this podcast. So anything that happens in the next 4 weeks will make this absolutely make no sense. So right now, as we speak, we're sort of waiting for Israel to strike back against Iran. And they have some clever stuff going on. I understand the Sharknado is among the top options for this.
Yeah. They can sneak the sharks in, have them dressed up with hijabs, you know, and sneak the sharks in.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's covered up, I mean, how are you going to even know it's a shark?
Yeah.
And clearly Soros funded, right?
Yes. This seems to leave out the NATO part of it, that shark NATO. Wait a second. Oh. I think let's just set that aside. That's too profound.
They spell it NATO for plausible deniability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was never a tornado. That was just the cover story. That was what we were told to believe. What do the ancients say about conspiracy theories, Mark? Or was life a conspiracy theory 5,000 years ago, pretty much?
From what I understand...
I would imagine you're running from too many animals to even think about a conspiracy theory.
The aliens that approached us to teach us to build things, we don't know that they came in great ships. I just to sort of get us back to the classic Ridley Scott alien, how do we know that perhaps they didn't burst out of the chests of the various citizens already, and then people would just think that they were spontaneously generated because they lose track. It might be delivered by rats or who knows what. They didn't know how diseases work back then, so they didn't track the particular asteroid that brought down the cells. All they know is that one day the entire Congress of South America, as they had back then, has burst chests and these very smart aliens who know architecture.
Yeah.
Are we their descendants then? Am I an alien?
Are you South American?
Maybe. I'm adopted, so there could be some DNA floating around in there.
I mean, Trump has been talking about bad genes. Let's say more things that'll be obsolete and are offensive. Bad genes, and I have to interpret that he knows this thing about the South American aliens. That's what he's referring to.
Well, he was privy to all that information from the first term, right? I mean, that's
right.
That was probably what he went to first. Bring me the alien file.
And it's just narrow-minded to think those are bad genes. They're just alien genes. It's okay if alien might reproduce by coming out of somebody's chest. That's just the way they do it.
You know, it's not great for us, but for them, it's a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just picturing the Oval Office right now with alien files strewn about with Big Mac wrappers.
Yeah.
All over the place.
And it's all UFO, like hardcore real space aliens. But he's like,
where's the chest bursters?
Where are the Latin American aliens? That's what I'm talking about. Get away from me with all these spaceships and rockets. I don't understand that stuff.
Have you ever seen that map with it's like a light up of the globe that shows where alien encounters have been sighted? And it's like literally in all like America and industrial, and like the South America is like black. So clearly, apparently, aliens have almost never visited an area that where people are keeping it simple.
Or they're overselling the fake. According to Mr. Heyerdahl, South America is the only place we have evidence that they visited. So they're just overselling the fake out, I think.
Was it Egypt too? Did they teach the Egyptians how to make the pyramids, or was that...
Well, you said aliens. The hieroglyphics said aliens. We don't know if that meant illegal aliens. There could have been people crossing over into Egypt, taking Egyptian stonecutter jobs and stone moving jobs, and you know, they didn't specify space.
But perfectly legal, and you should respect them.
I wouldn't want to do that work.
I would, yeah.
That's hard work, man. Just put me on a dock on the Nile with some dates and some people waving palms on me. That's works for me.
Everybody wanted to be a pharaoh. No one wanted to be a...
Yeah.
Be a eunuch. All right. And that was the downfall of Egypt.
I mean, would the aliens take eunuch jobs? So nobody has to be made into eunuch anymore?
Eunai.
And that's why we don't have eunai anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They're like, we'll just burst from your chest. You don't have to worry about trying to have sex with your queen. Don't worry about it. That's not our thing.
It seems like it's a distinct advance over the Flintstone, you know, use actual animals to be your furniture. So they're like, it's a living to have aliens do that kind of work.
Yeah.
Be a record player.
Well, that does imply that the stork vacuum cleaner it's their living, and I guess they're getting paid, and they go home at the end of the day. What's their vacuum cleaner?
Yeah, because they don't want to do that at home if they do that at work.
Smaller animals?
Yeah, I've been out all day doing this. Do you think I want to come home and vacuum my own house with my mouth?
Yeah, seriously. Come on.
I mean, these are the things that we have not yet discovered. Is it just a mess in the floor of the vacuum cleaner bird?
You've said discovery a few times now, Mark. What's going on? What are we thinking about? What is the philosophical angle on discoveries?
in improv, we're trying to stumble across. We're trying to discover things. Mm-hmm. And I was just musing.
Sure, sure.
And I don't want to tell you, oh, here's what the ancients thought, because I want you guys to explore what discovery means for you. What are the uncharted territories that are yet to discover? Do you even have to know that there are uncharted waters? Do you have to have a map that says, we don't know what's here. Maybe there's monsters. And then you go there, or you're not even looking for love. You're not even looking for the new world. And there it is.
What about taking joy in discovering, making new discoveries in areas you've already been? Why does it have to be uncharted? It's a bigger challenge to find a discovery in some place where you're always at, isn't it?
Inside yourself.
Yes.
I discovered yet another British punk band that I had not heard of. There were a lot of them, but I wasn't alive. I wasn't in Britain in 1977, so I just didn't know what was going on. There's more to discover.
Yes. Well, I think it's also the whole thing about you can only see what you're able to see. And, you know, you may discover the new world, Christopher Columbus, but what does he see? You know, he may not see what we would see today discovering a new, if that makes sense. You know, he may see the natives and the people there and not.
If he came today, what do you think? What do you think he would think? If, like, literally, he came across modern America today. So he,
yeah. Who are you talking to on that little box? What's going on?
I think he'd be a little intimidated.
Well, just the idea of the whole, like, you can't see what you're not able to see. You know, a child looking at a paycheck doesn't understand this piece of paper might mean money. You know, and this idea of, like, maybe we're rediscovering the meaning of things. And
I thought you were questioning Columbus's object and permanence. So if only they had put a big curtain up in front of the island. He would have just thought, oh, I didn't see anything. I'm just going to keep sailing.
I mean, this would explain why the Spanish explorers were so legendarily bloodthirsty and ruthless and pretty terrible, because they came over and they just couldn't even understand the profound civilization. There was a subway, the restaurant, the first subway, and they just couldn't even make sense of it. So they're just like, do you have any seeds on the ground or something? Oh, okay, we'll share you some maize, which was just one of the toppings of the subway.
Right. Do you want maize with that? Yes, I do. Sprinkle that on there. And if it was the Aztecs, they might just reach into the guy's next to him's chest and pull his heart out and just drop that on the sandwich.
With some crickets and unsweetened cocoa powder.
You got to add some texture in there.
Beans and squash, you know.
Sprouts.
How did the Aztecs learn the Kali Ma, reaching into the chest? How did they see that film? They were so advanced that they had that film.
They had time travel.
Yes.
They had all the 17 Indiana Jones films that were made. We haven't even discovered them all yet.
You think they were able to astral project a movie from now back to then, like onto the side of the pyramid, and they had movie night?
Wow, on the side of the pyramids? Well, I hope they didn't. They did something with the lens to keep it from getting kind of foreshortened on the screen.
Well, yeah, it's kind of an angle, so you got some blurriness. Yeah. Maybe in the center, it's a soft focus.
Yeah.
And they did that to, you know, help the older actresses out.
Well, movie night on the pyramids, I could see that happening.
I think we should do that now. I think this would be a great innovation.
Oh, imagine a movie with no popcorn.
Yeah, because like maize was like really tiny back then. I don't think it popped.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it did pop, but again, the Spanish just didn't understand that.
They didn't know what they were looking at. What is this?
They may have thought the Aztecs had guns and were firing at them, and that is what really set them off. We bring you movie night, and you're shooting at us.
I think the classic movie depiction of Frankenstein is how the explorers themselves were in the face of all that they could not understand. And they just were just very destructive.
Yeah. They never thought to eat during a movie. It just never occurred to them. I should eat something during a movie. What possible kind of shareable, handheld snack, salty, buttery snack exists? What is this? Some kind of fantasy land where we'd have a big paper cone of some what? You're crazy talk. That's crazy talk. What if I were to tell you on that faraway land Christopher Columbus discovered, that thing that looks like a loofah back scratcher? It ain't. You eat it. What? There we go. I think that's how it went down.
Hygiene wasn't big on Columbus's list, I don't think. I believe he was referred to as very dirty. Weren't the Europeans just like filthy to the Native Americans? They were just like, oh, gross. They stink. They're not clean. Here's this loofah. And then they took a bite out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess you can eat that.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun. Coming over here smelling like paella. Ugh. What is that smell? Oh, my gosh. Is that
Saffron? Is that what that is? Oh, you guys.
So what if you discover the wrong thing, right? They're trying to teach you the proper use of the loofah, but you just taste it and you think you've discovered a new taste sensation.
The next great crop.
Yeah. And that's your discovery. That's what you take away from that. And they didn't even know that they were giving that to you.
Yeah.
Now who's the sucker?
They didn't know to hold out for potatoes. This corn stuff's awesome. Let's move on. Oh, fellas. See, that thing's called potatoes.
Most peculiar was at the first Thanksgiving. Maybe this is going to be released around Thanksgiving, so let's just assume.
What did the ancients say about Thanksgiving, Mark? Did
they have- well, I think the first Thanksgiving, the melted marshmallows on the yams, that was the most okay. The most strange.
Right.
Yeah.
Where did marshmallows come from?
Socrates does not know where the marshmallows came from.
It may have just been cotton balls. Mm-hmm.
With cane sugar, cane. It's all crop related.
You put enough sugar on anything. Mm-hmm. You know, a spoonful of sugar makes the cotton ball go down.
Gross.
So the Wisconsin first Thanksgiving is all deep fried. Deep fried cotton balls. Deep fried. It all tastes the same.
Well, the cotton ball probably just incinerates instantly, and then it's just a husk of whatever the coating is fried.
Okay, yeah, kind of like if you try to fry cotton candy. It would just melt. It would just turn into nothing.
Has this inspired you, Mike, to start a scene that we can use to get around the tail end of this episode about discovery or something like that?
Sure.
Hey, moms. Looking for some lighthearted guidance on this crazy journey we call parenting? Join me, Sabrina Kohlberg. And me, Andy Mitchell, for Pop Culture Moms, where each week we talk about what we're watching and examine our favorite pop culture moms up close to try to pick up some parenting hacks along the way. Come laugh, learn, and grow with us as we look for the best tips and maybe a few what not to do's from our favorite fictional moms. From Good Morning America and ABC Audio, Pop Culture Moms. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Gentlemen, I plant this flag in our honor so that we can once again rule with impunity. I know it's a subway and there's people dining, but this table here, it's ours. This is our table.
And this flag that you've planted will grow. It'll grow to a great empire.
Yes, I have foreseen it.
Before we go on, the cookies come in.
Oh.
In four. They come in fours. You guys mind if I have the last one? Is that cool? Or...
Oh, yeah, sure.
Cool.
It's good to me.
I'll split it with you.
Can you split it?
50-50. Yeah, but yeah, I think this land, this table, this realm that holds up our national colors, these colors don't run.
No. We should add some color. I know I used the napkin for the flag. It does have Subway on it. So I'm not married to the green and gold for our nation's colors. But if you guys are good with it.
For the moment, it's fine. It's just, I know this is a period of transition. What with what just happened with the election and now the many nation states that are arising.
So many unforeseen ramifications.
If somebody else has the same exact colors for their flag and then we both show up like to battle them and then we have the same flag that they have, like, I think maybe we got to have more than just colors. I think we have to have some sort of distinctive shape.
I know origami. What do you want? I can completely fold it into something that's unique for us.
Oh, so not even like a shape depicted on the flag, the shape of the flag, you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
I like that. That's a great discovery that you could have a flag that is shaped like a swan.
Right. Now that the states are breaking up post-election, you know, Ohio had the only triangular flag. I think we could be the ones with the only swan. This was so much easier than trying to move to another country. Just claim this spot as our own country.
Incredibly easy. And we have trading partners all around us who speak the same language. It's very simple.
Yeah, there's no translations necessary.
Would you mind if I grabbed another napkin? This one's got little sweet teriyaki.
No, no, no. That's good. That's fine.
Let's grab a fresh one. A fresh one.
We need another set of utensils, though.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
If you're going to get a new napkin, you need a new set of utensils. It's just they're a package.
What do you need utensils for a sub?
Whoa.
Just the stuff that spills?
What are you, a heathen?
You just pick it up. It's bread. The bread is for holding with your hands.
But you still got to cut it into small consumable pieces.
No. You have your teeth.
A snake? Do you just shove the whole thing in your mouth?
You have teeth, right? Teeth are for biting the thing that you're holding. Do you not know how to eat a sandwich?
You know what? I'm going to claim this edge of the table for my own country. I am seceding from Subway Table-onia. And you can have your little sub club over there. On this side of the table, we eat with our hands.
Wait, am I a table-onia? Wait, what are we splitting up here? Are you?
You are table-onia.
Are you pro-utensil or are you anti-utensil?
I am the People's Democratic Republic of Subway table-onia, and we're a democracy here. And if people want to eat with utensils, then we can have a vote on it. We'll have a plebiscite. But until then, we eat with our hands.
I think that the law was given by God. God gave us hands to eat subs without a utensil. So you might secede. I'm going to succeed.
I'm not eating the sub with the utensils. I'm cutting it into smaller pieces so that I can eat it one piece at a time. I'm still using my hands to pick it up.
What about your incisors? You're putting your... You see, it's people over there in Tableonia who have the laziest incisors. You know, we have these front teeth, but your front teeth would rather do nothing, would rather let the hands do all the work. And a knife's and a fork's, meanwhile, they toil away doing all the cutting, a job perfectly suited to your front teeth. Is that kind of...
Are you claiming genetic superiority over there in the People's Democratic Republic of Subway Tableonia? That is not going to fit on the swan flag, by the way. That is way too long. That is way too long.
I might have to rejoin with Mike's because I really like the swan flag thing, and I don't know how to make a swan myself.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, unless I can commission a swan for my country, and then you could do some other...
I can export a swan flag to you, but just better make sure the tariffs are not high on it.
You know what I can do?
What's that?
Oh, who's got your swan flag? Who's got your swan flag?
Hey,
what are you going to do about it?
I mean, he can make another one. That's kind of the way origami works.
You play by my rules now. You play by my rules.
Stop molesting the swan.
You have been annexed by the People's Democratic Republic of Subway Tableonia. You may apply for full citizenship after 3 years of provisionary citizenship as a colony.
I have open borders. All are welcome.
All right.
You're going to deplete your population with your iron-fisted rule.
I'm going to take your sandwich then. Because if you have open borders, I'm going to swarm in and take advantage of that. And so that sandwich is now mine.
This sandwich completed my punch card. So I've got another one coming. Should I decide to go up?
Y'all done with that table? I got a family here who's looking to sit down for a little bit. You done over there?
Hey, you go immigrate to some other table. We're having a discussion. This is a very in-depth discussion.
Yeah, mister. Thanks. Come on, kids. Let's leave the boys to the little game.
Go by the ball pit. Little game.
I'm really surprised that they would approach us, given how many guns that we're all visibly carrying, that they would try to kick us off this table. They don't get paid enough for that.
Well, it's because they trust the guns. They're not afraid of guns. That's what the founders intended of the People's Democratic Republic of Subway Tableonia. That's what I intended.
They know we're only here to shoot bad guys.
I have evolved to use my utensils. You guys probably use your guns to shoot your sandwiches into smaller pieces.
No, only teeth. Guns have a sacred mission, and they're not for cutting sandwiches. What the hell is wrong with you?
Well, I would love to go Subway skeet shooting sometime and just start hucking 6-inch subs in the air and just shotgunning them. That could be a fun.
That does sound fun.
Not to break the scene reality, but I think that would be kind of fun.
Why don't we just all go do that? Let's just end the scene.
And, coleslaw. You're making coleslaw at that point.
Wow. We really discovered something about American democracy. We discovered something about the future. We discovered something about ourselves.
Subways are the future nation states.
I mean, there are a lot of them, so it makes sense.
They are the most popular franchise, so it makes sense if you ask me.
What percentage of Subway meals are, I guess, Subway? You know, wait. How many plan B's, C's, and D's is Subway on average on any given day? Is it ever plan A?
I think when one is crossing country, because then Subway is actually a step up from your McDonald's, that kind of stuff. So like, oh, we're gonna have something with lettuce in it.
It's healthy now.
And tomatoes.
Yeah.
A variety of vegetables.
Actually, in larger quantity, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Because like this, if you're going to get the 12-inch, that's a lot more lettuce and tomato. If you're just going to grab a burger, there's like sort of a tomato and maybe like three shreds of lettuce that made it onto it.
Can you go to Burger King that does it your way and say, could you just give me like an actually healthy amount of lettuce? Like give me a nice inch of lettuce. Will they do that?
I'm willing to find out. Let's find out, Mark.
By their charter, I would think so.
I thought maybe that had gone by the wayside, but I can't say I've walked into Burger King since I was seven.
I can't remember the last time I had Burger King.
Well, you got to go to one of those kiosks and type extra, extra lettuce in the kiosk and just see what happens.
Well, that's also why you got to make your nation state at the Subway, because if you go to the Burger King, clearly there's already a monarchy in place. And that's just one other government you got to fight to establish your existence.
I hear over at McDonald's, they got a clown in charge.
Yes. Easily overthrown.
Mm-hmm.
Chick-fil-A's got God on its side, though, so I don't know if I'd want to mess with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I mean, I hear you could sneak in on Sundays. That they're not going on Sunday. That might be a good time to make your claim.
Yeah, yeah. Subway's a theocracy.
Squatters' yeah. rights on Sundays.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A's a theocracy.
Yes,
Wendy's is a, what do you call it?
The People's Burger.
Well, it's not a patriarchy. It's a queen.
Yeah. It's a matriarchy.
Matriarchal.
But it's like a little girl
society. Yeah,
right.
That discounts Dave Thomas, though.
Dave Thomas is just a figurehead. The real power is the cartoon girl.
Their claim is freshness. Everything's fresh and not frozen. So I'm not sure what system of government would that equate to.
Yeah, don't get fresh with Wendy though. You'll let you have it.
Maybe there's a guest Wendy every day, because the Wendy's would grow up pretty quickly. So you might as well just have like a queen for a day sort of situation, where maybe you could be the Wendy if you dress appropriately.
Red pigtails, white and blue candy striping outfit.
What have we learned today, Mark? I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, when you start discovering things, more questions arise that now some intrepid photojournalist will take this and will bring in various girls dressed in the Wendy guise into Wendy's and demand of the employees, "I am the queen of the day," and just see and then film the hilarious reactions of the minimum wage employees. I'm sure it'll be quite varied.
I demand unlimited toppings for my baked potato.
I'd have some friends of mine, a married couple, went to a big costume party at one of the big Halloween bashes at one of the big theaters, dressed as Wendy and Dave Thomas. And they were actually very good costumes. And they would just make out in front of people. It was hilarious. It was very funny.
I think that we've learned that, discovery comes out of musings, which hopefully are a musing. And then, so it's just really what scientists do, what intellectuals do when they're just trying to discover stuff is just kind of horse around, just like improvers.
But also in the state of discovery, unexpected things happen, like Petri dishes being consumed. The best laid plans go to waste.
Mm. Marie Curie was actually doing a vaudeville act that involved her and her sisters kind of doing the kick line thing and then a little juggling. And that's when X-rays were discovered. Like, they really were not expecting that.
Yeah, 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 radium. Yeah.
Yeah, and then after her constant exposure to it, they probably just did like a darkened stage and her doing some sort of glow-in-the-dark dance.
That is how new forms of entertainment are discovered.
See? No one had ever done it before that.
The first movies in 3D were just a complete accident that, the film is broken. Let's have an actual train drive through the stage and then people in the audience are dead. That was the first 3D film. It was really an accident. It was just a series of wacky coincidences.
The City Zoning Commission did not really look at the request for where they wanted to build the theater. Sure, we'll rubber stamp it, not knowing eventually there would be a train running through the theater.
Yeah, because it was these explorers that were going to the first theaters run by the indigenous Americans, and they didn't understand that the train coming out of them was merely an illusion. And so when they set up the first theaters, they had actual trains running over the audience. That's where we get the Terrifier series. That's why we have entertainment that literally assaults you with its disgustingness.
Does that kind of relate to the podcast, though? Like, you said people listen to this once, and that day you got to watch the movie once, and that was it, because you'd be dead.
Yep. I don't want to tell people that they should kill themselves after listening to this. I do not want to tell them.
Don't. Do not.
Since this will come out after whatever has happened, I'm saying that stuff has gone down.
Boy, those last 3 weeks before the election, crazy. Right?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Someone's going to lay their claim at a Subway, I'm telling you right now.
I learned a lot from you, Mark.
Well, I learned a lot from you. Was there a particular improv lesson, Bill?
No, not really. Just didn't go that way. I'll save it for next time.
Okay.
I was going to say support. Everything was supported.
There we go. Yes. Thank you for your support, Mike.
I'm not going to ask Mike who won then, which of the it's lessons fine. Won.
It's, we all won.
I want him to keep that safely in his heart and never reveal that to a soul.
Eventually, it will burst forth.
That's the idea. So perhaps on one of your episodes, perhaps my episode where I appeared on your show will eventually burst out your answer to that.
Your episode will burst out on the internet at some point, I promise.
Perhaps before this one comes out.
Well, like I said, we're trying to get 8 more people.
Okay. No release date yet. Okay, fair enough.
We need 8 people to play with us. Actually, I guess I should say 7 because we did have one who just said he's available Mondays in November. So that's one. Okay. All right. But I keep reaching out to the people who said they could do it, and I don't hear back that often. So that is the hard part.
What if you have Bill on again just doing a funny voice?
That's always a possibility.
I can always do a funny voice.
We did get a gentleman from the Secret City Improv Festival, which we actually just did the show live on stage. 2 locations. We were at the Oak Ridge Public Library with wonderful staff. They were very friendly and supportive, and we had 8 people come to see us in the little fish tank room.
Hey, that's better than we were in a theater and we had 2 people, so.
I've been there, too. And then we did it later over at the Grove Theater, which holds like 500 people. And I think we had about 75 to 100 people. And so it felt much different on, because it's like a giant stage. And the first row of seats is like 50 feet from the stage. So we felt very small up on that stage because we're just like this tiny table and a bunch of chairs. So it's like a booth. So we weren't moving around like the other acts were. So it felt a little weird to be up on such a big space and people so far away. Whereas even though we only had 8 people at the library, they were 2 feet from us and we could like kind of much more easily gauge the reaction to what we were saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe Hitchhikers and Appetizers Live is probably best in like a cabaret where it's smaller, 50 to 100 people, probably something like that.
Yeah.
So we are learning as we go, as we've done it live. And we're also trying to figure out if we need to add a little more context to it so that people kind of get what it is. Because obviously not everybody knows who Douglas Adams is or what the Holy Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Universe is. So it's like they just start watching it. They're like, wait, what's this Hitchhiker's thing?
What's going on?
What Milliways? What the hell's that?
Yeah.
So we're bouncing around the idea of whether or not we need to like just maybe like record an intro that kind of gives a real short summary of what it all is so they have a little more context going into what they're about to watch.
All right. Bill will send you his Douglas Adams impression intro.
A whole tape of 100 voices. A man of 100 voices. Just don't ask me to ever do them again.
Don't ask me to do it for more than 2 sentences.
Yes.
If I have to continue to do the voice for a whole scene, for instance. Just give it up.
Well, it was great having you, Mike.
Yes.
Oh, this was a blast. I had a good time.
Awesome.
Hopefully it has more than 8 people coming to see it.
Indeed.
Thanks, listeners. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, everybody. Good fun.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.